Hi, and welcome to the Unschooled Space, the podcast that's here to help parents embrace their personal journey into unschooling with all the joy and challenges it's likely to bring. Each episode, I talk with other parents about their experiences. This is episode 62, and I'm your host, Esther Jones. And if you're interested in hearing more about unschooling and mindful parenting, come and find me on Instagram or my website, which is esther-jones.com, and sign up for my newsletter. Still a couple of places on my Mindful Deschooling 5-week course, which starts on Friday, May the 10th. So my guest today is Robin Tamlyn-Lee. Robin is South African, but now lives in the Bay of Plenty in New Zealand with her husband and two children, who are 7 and 3. Robin took her daughter out of school when she saw that already from a very early age, there was a strong narrative around academic expectations and her daughter not doing well enough. We talk about how when we sit back and observe, there's so much learning happening all the time, and how beyond the academic learning, living in this way with our children allows us to value so many other things in life, such as rest, learning about our own rhythms, and recognising and meeting our own needs. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Robin. Thank you so much for your time today. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Esther. I'm very excited to be here.
Great. Well, let's just begin by, if you could tell us a little bit about your family and how you came to unschooling.
Sure. So, yeah, we're a family of four living in New Zealand. We are originally from South Africa, and myself and my husband, and my daughter is 7 and my son is 3.5. And yeah, we got started. My daughter started school when she turned 5 in December, and she started the following January, February. So she was very young, I felt. And we did 2 terms of school initially at a new school. And yeah, when I went to have a look at it, it sounded great. They said all the right things, like one size fits one, and you know, all of that sort of stuff. So I felt quite happy with the choice. I had previously played with the idea of homeschooling just because I think everything at the time was in a little bit of a weird space after the pandemic. So I wasn't too keen to do it initially, but I kind of thought if I needed to, I would. And yeah, we got started with school. I felt like she was incredibly young to be going to school because in South Africa, we kind of start 6, 7-ish. And yeah, there were a few things that started to happen. Like at one point I got called in because she was struggling to concentrate. So we had to get her ears checked and her eyes checked and took her to these tests, and actually everything was absolutely fine. And, you know, for me, I thought, well, how is she supposed to concentrate when there's 30 of her friends who are playing and she's got to sit at a table and write a few letters? You know, I thought, of course she doesn't want to do that. So yeah, and then there was a bit of pressure in that sense, in terms of, you know, oh, she can't write this letter and she can't write that letter, and we think we might just hang on to her in this class before she can move to the next class. And some of her friends were moving to the next class. Yeah, I just was like, this is quite crazy for such a young age to be almost giving that story of, you know, she's not good enough. They didn't say that, but that's how I felt. And, you know, my husband unfortunately had like a really bad school experience when he was younger. And it set him on the path of didn't want to be in school, didn't want to learn. He had to struggle through school. And so for me, I was very much aware of, if she was going to have the story of I'm not good enough from the get-go, I'm just not doing that for the next 13 years, you know, I'm just not going to let that happen to her. And yeah, so we were like playing with it. And I thought, you know, here I am giving my 5-year-old over to somebody else, basically to raise for 6 or 7 hours of the day, and I don't think that this person has got her best interest at heart, or is going to nurture her, or is going to nourish her, and is obviously not going to love her like I love her. So I just felt like that's a very young and vulnerable age to hand over to somebody who's already, just in 6 months, giving her the story of she can't concentrate and she can't write these letters and she can't do this and she can't do that. And that kind of freaked me out quite a lot. Yeah, and she's also just always been a kid who does everything in her own time. She's always, you can't tell her or try to get her to do anything faster than what she would want to do it. And in the mornings, I would sit there and I'd be like, you got to finish your breakfast. You got to finish your breakfast. We've got to go. Like, we need to hurry up. We've got to get out the door. End up almost screaming at her to finish her breakfast, which was just so not our relationship ever. And yeah, I was like, this is, I'm not enjoying this. This is not fun. So luckily I had the opportunity in my work life to be able to be at home with her. And in New Zealand, we only have to apply for an exemption when she was six. So in the holidays of the after the second term, I said to my husband, you know what, let's just take her out for 6 months and let's see what happens. You know, let's play with the idea. Let's just trial it for 6 months. And yeah, that's kind of where our journey started. For me, I just always thought if she can learn to read, she can learn anything. And if she loves to learn, she will learn anything. And yeah, I mean, myself and my husband, we came from very different school backgrounds. I quite enjoyed school. As I mentioned, he didn't. He loves to learn all things to do with technology. I hate that stuff. You know, my interests are so different. And I just felt like, isn't it amazing that we both actually love to learn what we are interested in as adults? But if you sat me in a class and told me to do technology for an hour, you know, I'd want to leave.
I know. I often think that. Yeah, I love what you've just said there, and we'll come back to your journey. But that, as adults, if someone said, okay, you're going to do a two-hour chemistry class tomorrow morning, I don't know, how can I do that? I just, that would feel completely beyond me. It might be someone else's dream, of course, but we're all so different, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, what a journey. And how was it for you? So when you came out of school, what did that feel like? Because you say you've come from fairly, let's say, mainstream kind of school ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did it feel for you to come out of school and letting go a little bit, right, I imagine, for you?
Yeah, it was very interesting. You know, I'll never forget, I looked up a group of other homeschoolers in our area, and we went along to a play group, and there were three parents and three or four kids. And it didn't go the way I thought it would. We just didn't really align with the people, and my daughter didn't enjoy the kids. And I remember getting home. I mean, it was like day one of our kind of homeschool journey. And I remember getting home and just crying. And I was like, what have I done? I've taken her out of the school where she had friends. And like, but we very quickly found our group. And I think I started to learn about deschooling, and I amazingly somehow, I don't even know really how, but came upon your podcast and a couple of other unschool podcasts, and I just completely fell in love with the philosophy. I just was like, this feels so right, you know. Even though I didn't mind school, I felt like this is so natural. This is like such a journey of personal development for the child and for the parent. And how amazing to be able to follow this way of life. So, but yeah, I mean, I've been through and still go through weekly or daily all sorts of different de-schooling moments, you know. I think that's like never ending.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And what do you do when you have those trigger moments? Have you developed sort of ways of being with them, of sitting with them, of working through them? Because I think anyone listening who's going through this, particularly that first year, might be surprised at how many moments during the day some old thought pattern, some belief gets triggered. And it's quite uncomfortable, isn't it?
Very, very uncomfortable. Yeah, I think what I've learned to do is question it, to try and just dig deeper. You know, the other day, not even that long ago, because it's now been almost 2 years since we've been doing this journey, and my daughter goes to, I like to call it a farm school, but it's really a lady who has a group of them on a weekday, and they're all on a farm and they play and they learn, and you know, they do practical things, which is really lovely. And she posted a picture of all of their drawings And I knew before it even came, I was like, oh, I'm going to open this. And I know that my daughter's is not going to be as good as anybody else's drawing. And I just went into like this total trigger mode. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, how can I judge her drawings against other kids? I mean, it's, you know, it's her artwork. But it was like, I really had to unpack what I was feeling and why I was feeling like that. And, you know, I just had to ask, like, okay, what is the whole big deal around this? You know, why am I getting triggered? Because I feel like her drawing or her writing isn't advanced as other children. But yeah, I just had to really sit with it and obviously not let up anything to her, but just really sit with it and kind of question on why it was so, it obviously is so ingrained in us as a society. It runs so deep that something as simple as a kid's drawing, you know, can bring it up.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I think that when you sit with it, a lot of the time, just as you're describing, it may feel like it's something to do with the child. And then you sit with it and it is your own old story. Yeah. It may be something about us failing or something about us not doing well enough. And that's interesting, isn't it? That's that I think in order for a child to live very freely, let's say, and to not be in that not enough deficit kind of mode that you were describing, we have to unravel our kind of not enoughness or our own deficit mode, which is quite a big piece of work, isn't it?
Huge. I feel like it's just never ending because it's so interlinked in everything. You know, I feel like it's just it kind of links into everything that we do on a daily basis and the way that we live our lives. And I guess for me, I've always questioned mainstream ways. So, you know, like, for example, I had two home births when in South Africa, almost every single person will go to hospital. But there was always elements of me going, I don't know if I want to do what most people are doing. Why don't I want to do that? And then like delving into it and really reflecting around that. And just luckily my husband is also, you know, quite similar. So we'll often talk about it and I'll say to him like, oh, I've just totally been triggered by this. This is ridiculous. What's going on? And, you know, we'll kind of hash it out together.
That's great. Yeah, that's really helpful, I think, is to have that person to reflect with. That good enoughness and that whole deficit mode. What do you feel for your daughter? And they're your son, of course, but he's much younger. But for your daughter, often I think we take children out of school. Rarely to do with academics, is it? It's really about their lives and how they're living. And you described that seeing potentially that light being dimmed. And so, a little question around, what do you think that your daughter gets out of life beyond the freedom to learn? Like, do you see aspects of this that when you talk about her personal development in ways that she's able to thrive that maybe even have surprised you? I don't know.
That's a good question. I think it's definitely been such an interesting journey with her. And, you know, I have really just tried to unschool in the way of following her and what she's interested in and letting her do what it is that she needs to do without me taking over. And I'll never forget, like, when it was a few months ago, and she was in this zone where all she wanted to do was play outside in the back garden, and we have a trampoline and a monkey bar set up, so it's like monkey bars. And she pretty much just wanted to do that every single day for 2 weeks. That's all she wanted to do. I offered to do all sorts of other things with her, activities, and that's what she wanted to do. And she just, it was almost like her body and her brain were saying she needs to be outside and she needs to be physical. And, you know, it was just so fascinating to me because I thought, in my schooled brain, you know, we could be doing other things, we could be you know, learning to read and reading books or this and that. And I had to really stop myself and go, let's just let her be. What is it that she's needing from this, you know? I didn't ask her or I didn't have conversations with her, but I just observed it. And I found that really, really interesting that that's what she wanted to do for 2 weeks straight. And it was really cool to be able to give her the opportunity and the space to be able to do that, you know. But yeah, I've also noticed she's a real people person. She kind of loves people. And what I do really love is watching her interact with people of all ages. And, you know, we will go out for walks and she'll stop and she'll ask somebody of any age, you know, whether they are 70 years older than her or 40 years older than her. And she'll say, oh, what's your dog's name? And okay, cool. And how old is your dog? And what's your name? And, you know, she's just really interested in, yeah, and the people around her. And I find her social skills and her people skills have been amazing to watch over the past 2 years. Yeah, which has been really cool to see.
You've just reminded me when my daughter was probably 4 or 5, and we were living in Spain at the time, and she didn't really like going to the playground, but she loved going to this dog park where people would take their dogs. And we would we spent many of our days just going on these long walks through the town, meeting people, chatting to them about their dogs. And that was how she loved to sort of socialize. And we met so many local people that way. That was really interesting to me, because in my head I had like, yeah, we got to hang out with children, right? But actually she wanted to do something quite different. But there was something you were talking about. Yeah, you're talking about that, letting her do it in her own time. Yeah. And I think that that is so undervalued. And you were talking earlier about the getting ready, the breakfast, and got to get out, got to get moving. You have to keep doing it like this. And that giving children the opportunity to feel into, like leaving breakfast aside, but definitely the trampoline in the backyard, feeling into that. How do I feel right now? What's right for me? What's right for my body? It's actually really huge, isn't it? Because then they go through life with that ability to feel into what's right for them, which I think for a lot of us, we've maybe sort of, you know, lost that ability to feel into what's right for you right now. I often think how unschooling, in a way, it feels uncertain. You know, you're taking away that ability to know what's going to happen in the future. But in fact, at the same time, hopefully you're helping your child be someone who knows how to navigate their own lives.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that you say that about the uncertainty, you know, of knowing what will happen in the future, because really that is the only thing that we all is guaranteed in life. Like, nobody does know. So if we can, you know, accept and allow that uncertainty, but let them be able to learn how to navigate through that at such a young age, I think that's something that we never really got the chance to learn. You know, like, I mean, I had amazing parents and they never really would have forced me to do anything like go to school, but we still had to go, you know. It wasn't really, if you were having an off day, you didn't get to sit on the couch and watch a movie. And yeah, like even today, actually, I was feeling a little bit tired, but my daughter was really not herself. Like I said, she's always happy and this and that and light. And she was just, yeah, I was like, what's going on? Is she sick? Does she have a temp? And she didn't, but she was just really like quite low energy. And I, you know, thought, okay, well, let's get out. Let's get some sunshine. Let's get some fresh air and go for a walk. And we did. And we got back and she was still not feeling great. And I just said to her, all right, let's put a movie on. You know, you guys chill and watch a movie. I'm going to have a nap. And how amazing to both, or all three of us, because my son was with us too, but how amazing that we can actually just say, actually, we're not feeling great. And what we need is some time on the couch or a nap. And that's okay. You know?
Yeah.
Like, let's not push through or judge or, you know, try and, yeah, I mean, I obviously did try and get them out and I thought that would perk everybody up, but we all just got back and decided we wanted to lounge.
Yes, just being able to go at your own rhythm and also noticing when everyone just needs to connect and not do something and be productive, and that there's that huge value, isn't there, in just connecting and just being and not actually proving anything or getting somewhere.
I think, yeah, I struggle with that a lot because I've always been that person, you know, just naturally. Yeah, like when I was in school, I'd always just get my homework done. Nobody had to ask me to do it, and active relaxer, I think. And now that's what I guess my kids are teaching me, is to just sometimes you've just got to be, and sometimes you don't actually have to do anything, and you also don't have to feel guilty about not doing anything. And that's really a huge learning journey for me. You know, whether it's my personality or society that I've grown up in, I don't know, but it's definitely part of my de-schooling journey as well, is just to learn to slow down and to not feel bad about not having anything particularly planned or active or doing.
So, that's
such a journey.
It really is. Yeah. And then you were talking about community and that you found people around you. How's that been for you, finding your tribe?
Yeah. For people who are listening, I think don't worry if you don't find your community immediately, because it can take a bit of trial and error. And I find sometimes the kids get on, but the parents don't necessarily. And sometimes the parents get on, but the kids don't necessarily. And it's, I think it can take a while to find your tribe. But just keep going, and there should, you know, hopefully there'll be people that you can connect with. And I feel like we are quite lucky now, where we really have found a few families that we get on really well with, and the kids get on. And, you know, also like not necessarily having kids of the same age, and that's totally fine. Sometimes they get on with children who are much older or much younger. So but it's been good. And I think that the community is growing here as well, the homeschool community. Where we are, which is great because it means that there's more people. And we are also very lucky that we live in a cul-de-sac that have pretty much every neighbor has children. So my kids will be out on the streets until 7 p.m. at night playing with the children, and they all go to school. But, you know, in the afternoons and on the weekends, they are like their own little tribe, which is really lucky. But yeah, I think with our homeschool community, it's not a lot, you know, it's about a handful, maybe five families that we connect with, but that's more than enough for us. You know, it keeps us connected and we've got enough variety for everybody to get on with.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it can take a while, can't it, to find, just the people that you gel with and the activities and so on. And of course, it doesn't look anything like school. And I think we have to really understand that it doesn't need to look like that, and every child and every parent might sort of look for different things as well. And how does that work? So with your son, who's much younger, how do you find that balancing of different needs in the day?
Challenging. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, including your own, of course.
Yeah, and they are very different children a lot of the time. But yeah, so we do, you know, what I've noticed is most mornings, if we're lucky, most mornings, that is their time where they are very chilled and they get on with each other and they can be very focused in an activity. So what I've learned is to not actually plan to meet up with people or to have activities or anything in the mornings, because that's our chill time. That's where they can sit for a good couple of hours and be focused. And then I can also sometimes get a little bit of work done while that happens. So I kind of love our mornings now. They're very slow. I try not to rush us out the door because I know that I'm probably not going to get back in the day. And then as the day goes on, I find, okay, they start getting a bit restless, or they're arguing, or, you know, they get a bit bored and we kind of need to get out. So we go for like a walk around the block, or a scooter, or a skate, or we go to a playground, or we just do something where we break that energy in the day And I think that that for us has kind of been our flow that has been working most days, obviously not every day. And yeah, I mean, they are very different, and they almost, I want to say, like quite typical girl and typical boy, where he's into all the vehicles and the trucks and the cars and everything, and she's into the dolls and the Barbies. But they do often play together in one way or another, and then sometimes they don't and they want me to play with them, and that's okay, you know. And yeah, we do like a lot of messy play, so that's one of my daughter's absolute loves. And for about the first year, it was an element that was missing in our homeschool journey. And she's a real like creative, and a friend got out, they found this table, which is like a messy play table. And I was like, I need this. We need to get this today. And we got it, and I filled it up with warm water and stuff. And she just basically climbed into that. And she just said, "This is my best day ever, Mom." And so we do a lot of things with that, because that's, you know, what I've loved is to see how that type of thing really lights her up. And my son, actually, he loves it too. So it's really great for both of them. And they will just do all sorts of, whether it's painting, and then, you know, she'll end up painting her whole body pretty much, and the feet will go in, and very sensorial, very light. They love the textures and the colors and everything. So we do a lot of that sort of stuff as well.
You've just reminded me of something which I always find interesting, because I think it's quite a, I think most of this is quite nuanced as sort of the parents' role in everything. But of course, you know, they are children, so we need to be bringing things in. I was just thinking about that messy play element, you know, to what extent navigating that, them knowing what they want to do and us bringing things into them. I don't know, I always find that kind of interesting, because oftentimes we'll bring in an idea, I'm sure you have, and they've gone, no,
yes,
not interested. And so finding that balance, I think, can be quite difficult at the beginning, because also at the beginning I think we tend to think, okay, I'm going to bring all these ideas and it's going to look like I think it needs to look. We don't necessarily realize we were doing that, but we kind of assume it will look a certain way. I don't know, have you found that?
Yeah, it's hard. It's definitely challenging to find that balance of wanting to bring in a little bit but not overruling it. And yeah, I think for me, initially, I really went into de-school mode, and I really stepped back and I was like, we're just putting the brakes on everything, taking a step back. And so I kind of didn't bring in much at all, I think, because I really wanted to observe how it was going to unfold. And then, like I say, I think that especially was one moment that I realized I actually do need to sometimes bring in a little bit more. But, you know, it'll go differently every day. Like you say, sometimes it will be go well and they love your ideas, and sometimes they are not interested at all. So I'll often just, you know, come up with a suggestion. Do you want to do baking today? Yes, let's do baking. Nope, 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 not interested. Okay, well, then we're not going to do baking. But I do, it's like a little bit of, I guess, compromising, you know. And sometimes I will say, you know what, like, I actually feel like I really need to get to the beach. Do you want to go to the beach? And then sometimes they'll say no, and I'll say, well, we've done a lot of stuff for you guys today. Like, this is what I want to do, and we're going to go to the beach. And we do, and they always love us and always have the best time. But it's kind of, I think, what I've struggled with in the past is, like, almost what they want to do overrides what I want to do. But, you know, we're all in this together, and we're all in the day together. And I think teaching them, and obviously putting yourself first, it can be really hard as a mom, I think. So giving yourself that permission to actually say, this is what I need, you know, let's compromise on this.
Yeah.
Because I have already done a lot that's been for you guys, you know, and for your best interest. So obviously just teaching them, I guess, that, yeah, we've all got to kind of work together to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because, yeah, you're right. And as a mother in particular, that putting your own needs first, it's can be quite hard. But I do think we have to also role model what it is to recognize your own needs, what it is to advocate for your own needs, because it can be very depleting for an adult to play as well. I mean, playing for adults isn't always easy. Yeah, you're probably still in that phase of sort of imaginative play where playing involves taking on a role, being a character. It can be hard to do that. But, and I think actually that's why it's so important also is to have those things that you both or you all love that you can go, I know, why don't we do this? And it's that thing that somehow fulfills everybody. And I think finding those things is a real key to all of this. Because there are bound to be things that you both love, whatever they look like.
Yeah, we've definitely found a couple of those things. And I think I do love that, you know. So we've got a skate park and a pump track down the road. And, you know, the kids just love going there. And it also means that we can go for a whole big walk around the field and there's a playground. And so I love that because I love to be out. And yeah, so that's always the kind of the winner is, okay, let's go to the pump track or the skate park. And everybody's in agreement. Yeah, that's a great idea. It is important.
Yeah. Finding those win-win situations as much as possible, I think, can be very, very sort of fulfilling. Yeah, I mean, some of our best days are quite spontaneous, really, where, you know, oh, I know, why don't we do that? And, of course, everyone's in it because you're doing something you both love doing. And the mood is great, and then that leads to something else. And I think there's a lot of value in that.
It just actually reminded me that was one of the moments that I realized how important this unschooling journey is, because I can't remember what it was. It could have been a podcast I was listening to or something I was reading, and something just hit me. And I thought, you know, if we all live for 90 years, children only have 13 years really where they can have the ability to be in an imaginative play naturally, you know, and it comes naturally to them. And I just thought, why are we rushing that? Like, why are we trying to get children out of that and into a logical place for and a practical place for most of the day, you know, for the majority of the day when they go to school? I just feel like, isn't that crazy that we want to rush children through this phase that they're never going to get back again? You know, as an adult, like you say, it's so hard to immerse yourself in that imaginative play, and for them it just is so natural. And that was one of the moments where I thought, actually, this is what we need to be doing. Yeah, allow them that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have that ability for a reason, and you know, a lot of it is because play for them is their learning. It's where they practice, you know, adult scenarios, and they practice doing things that they'll do when they're out in the big wide world. And it's such an integral part of their learning. And I wonder if it's because we are incapable of getting into that zone as adults that we undervalue it. But we do this thing, don't we, where we say, well, that's play and that's learning.
Yeah.
And learning happens there at this time of the day, and you have to go there to learn. Yes. And people worry and they say, well, they're not really learning, they're playing all the time. We've got this absolute division, but of course it doesn't look at all like that. And when we're in a playful state of mind, we're actually in the best possible place to learn.
We're open.
Curious, you know. And when you're in a stressed place, I'm thinking about your daughter, if she's feeling that she's being looked at like she's not enough, she's not doing well enough, she's got to do it better, just being that sort of stressed and judged, it shuts down our learning capacity
completely. Then you're not open to learn or even listen, you know.
Yeah, then you're worried about, you know, it's that fight or flight place where you're just worried about
in trouble for something.
I mean it's just it's such a different space. So that playful space actually is a wonderful frame of mind to be in. And I think that when you watch children, you realize they are not making a difference. They're not saying, oh, now I'm learning, now I'm playing.
No, never.
It's all the same, right?
Yeah, it's so interesting. And they always, it's almost like it happens internally. And as the adult, you kind of do have to stop and observe to understand and to see the learning, I think, often, you know, like just thinking today, even my daughter, oh, both of them, actually, my kids had Play-Doh and they had clay. And they wanted to mix them together. And I was like, no, don't do that, because then we're not going to be able to reuse it, you know.
Right.
And it was too late. They'd already done it. And I thought, well, this is how they're going to learn the two different, completely different textures. Do they gel together? Do they not gel together? But obviously it's not, you know, you're not writing down the answers. It's just happening internally as a natural process of experimenting, yeah, really, and playing.
But then as the adult, you have to understand that it's happening, even though you can't yeah, see it. Because that's quite hard at the beginning, isn't it? Because school is very, there's always some output, right?
You
can see there's evidence. Mm. And of course, at home, there might not be evidence.
No.
I don't know. Is that something that you found at the beginning? Like, how do I know I'm learning?
Yeah, very much so. And I think, you know, when you haven't delved too much into it, when you really are just starting, you kind of almost want to prove to family and friends that they are learning and they are going to be okay, and that we have, you know, we are on the right track. And it's, yeah, it's really hard because you can't show them anything.
Yeah.
But what I've realized over the past couple of years is that obviously I've worked on myself a lot, so I don't feel the need to do that. And I just feel like I really love the people that they are becoming, even though they are still quite young. And, but, you know, just watching all the other aspects besides just the intellectual aspect of learning, but the emotional intelligence and the relationships and the communication. And there's really so much learning that goes on that isn't just intellectual and can you write the alphabet or can you spell or can you read. So it's like learning becomes so much more than that, really. I think it becomes about every single aspect of life.
Once you see that these are people who are capable of learning very easily when they turn their mind to it, when they are interested in it, I think it also takes away that worry. Will they learn? There comes a point where you say, well, yeah, I can see that they do.
Yeah, and they do. They always come up with something, and I'll say, oh, how do you know that? Or where did you learn that?
Yeah.
And I love those moments because it's like, I didn't say that, so I don't know where you got it from, but you picked it up from somewhere. And I mean, it's just amazing. Like I was telling you earlier, we spent 6 weeks in South Africa now on holiday, and you know, we went to the aquarium and we went to safari, and my son is just obsessed with animals and he loves them and he wants to know all of their names and he wants to know what they do and how they live and what do they eat, and he just loves it, you know. It's right up his alley. And my daughter was like, okay, this is fun, can we go, kind of thing, you know. She loves like textures and stuff, so she'd walk past and she'd feel the different textures of things, whereas my son wants to know all about, almost like, I guess, the intellectual side of things, you know. So you can see the learning happening with him, whereas with her in that moment, you know, it was quite different because she is interested but not as interested as him. And it was funny because what she loves is relationships and people. So she would go and talk to somebody that she'd just met for the first time that was like a family friend, and she'd say, oh, so, you know, where do you live and how many sisters and brothers do you have and do you have any children and how old are your children? And that's where she is questioning everything, you know, and that's what she's interested in and what she loves. And she would come back and she'd be like, oh, so I met Nicole and, you know, she's got two daughters and her daughters are this age and this age. And so she's learned a whole bunch, but it just looks very different to what my son was learning about.
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? Because if you do have more than one child, well, there's no one way of knowing. It's really about your relationship with your child and seeing that child and the way that that child is interacting with the world. Yeah, here too, I have that kind of mixture, quite a similar mixture in a way, the sort of the relationship one, that way of thinking, and then the very factual gathering of facts, which is in a way much easier to go, oh, yeah, they've clearly learned all that.
The other is
learning just as much, but it looks less academic, perhaps.
And then I think the funny thing is it actually is, they are still learning, but they just don't show it because they're not interested in that specific area. Because, you know, then she'd said to me something about, oh, did you know the rhino's horn is made out of the same as our hair? And I thought, okay, so you actually did learn, right, and were listening, but you just, yeah, it just didn't look like it at the time.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's very new. It really is very nuanced. And I think it just all comes back to just observing your child. I think that's just, that's all we can do, really. And then do that, that sort of dance of, like, where are we needed? Where are we, how am I holding this? I think.
Yeah. Which is such a learning curve for us as parents, I think.
It's such a learning curve. Yeah, absolutely. But just coming back to, just want to circle, we've got a few minutes left, just circling right back to that, what you were saying at the beginning, and that good enough piece, because to me that's such a key in all of this. And I think, well, your experience is probably common to many people, where they say, okay, we've got this deficit lens going, and I cannot go down the track of my child at this early age feeling not good enough. And that feels to me, it's just such a thread that goes through it, isn't it? That they're always good enough. There's not necessarily a place, because when we start saying, oh, you need to be more of this, more of this, more of this, we actually get into a place where we're sort of incapable of doing more, because it becomes stressful. And I think as adults, we see this as adults, we see it in work, in, you know, when you're striving and not enjoying the journey, it can often feel very depleting.
I think you're so right. And what I feel is happening now with, you know, maybe our generation, is that a lot of people do go through life as adults in a career or with this or that, because they thought that's what they needed to do to be good enough. And then they turn around and realize, am I actually even happy? Am I even doing what's aligned with me? Do I know who I am? And we almost have to start unraveling basically how we grew up. And I think that's such a huge journey, and it's a lot as an adult to navigate. Whereas if we can just start to teach our children that, they are enough in whatever way that they are and whatever their strengths are, that's more than enough. And if we can just develop and work on that, and letting them be and letting them learn who they are and be happy with who they are, I think is really the biggest gift that we can give them. Because unfortunately, obviously, for some schools and some children, they're not going to struggle and it's all going to be fine and they will come out and thrive. But, you know, unfortunately, I think that a lot of children and a lot of schools just don't have the time or the capacity or the ability to give that, because they've got a curriculum that they have to stick to. And if your child's not keeping up with it, then they kind of aren't good enough. And that's the message that comes through in that comparison, is, well, your peers are managing, but you aren't, or your peers are getting A's, but you aren't. And it's really that's where that whole story comes from, I feel, is, well, I'm not good enough because I'm not getting an A, but my friend is getting an A in this subject that I have absolutely no interest in. And it really just begins that whole comparison journey. And then that's how it goes into adulthood. So, for me to be able to give my children that, and you know, they are so completely different, but neither one of them is better than the other. They are just who they are, and they are different, and we love them both, you know, exactly the same. And that's good enough, I think.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you. We're coming to the end now, but if you, just before we finish, is there anything that you, any advice that you would share with someone sort of starting on this journey?
I think the first thing I would say is, really, if you have a feeling or an inkling or something in your intuition or your gut is telling you that something's not right, I really encourage people to act on that, because it sometimes can be really hard to listen to that gut intuition feeling, but it's almost never wrong. And that's what got me on and what has kept me on the journey, because a lot of times I've thought, should we go back, you know, should we look at school? And my intuition's just said, no, just keep doing this. And I think that's the most important thing. And secondly, really finding the community and people who are like-minded. So even if you can't find those people in person as friendships, find them on podcasts or in books or, you know, in YouTube videos or whatever it is. But for me, that's been an absolute lifeline is listening to all of these podcasts. I think I've listened to everyone. Because, you know, when I'm having a tough day and I'm questioning if we're doing this the right way or if we should be doing it, and I listen, then I go, oh, yeah, that's why I'm doing this. Okay, yes, yeah. This makes sense. This feels good. This feels right.
Yeah, I love that because it's so, you know, you are taking a step into something that feels really unknown, aren't you? And I think to make it more familiar, so we are hardwired to not want to go into the unknown for obvious reasons.
No.
Quite dangerous. And so I think to go, yeah, you are so right, just listening and making it feel more familiar. That's great.
It is alternative to mainstream. And if you've grown up in a mainstream way of life, it can be challenging to know if you're doing the right thing. So just, I think, you know, involving yourself in as many ways as possible to keep reassuring you of the reasons why you're doing this and why it feels good. Just do that as much as you need to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely. Oh, thank you so much, Robin. It's been absolutely lovely chatting with you.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
Great. We'll catch up with you soon. And love to you and your family.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.